and welcome to In Bed with Lisa and the Wine, Dine and 69 podcast. This is an unusual and really awesome setup today because it's going to be a chat rather than an interview with two sex educators, sex experts, if you will. So please allow me to introduce Rachel Dalton.
Hi, I am so excited that we're doing this. This is, I love collabing. I love having conversations rather than interviews. I'm excited to jump into the topic that we've discussing today.
Fantastic. Me too. I'm just so excited about this also, just to hear your take on these topics. Mm-hmm. So I'm Lisa Welsh. And like I said, this is Rachel Dalton. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit for any of my listeners?
Yeah, sure. And then we can do vice versa. I'm Rachel. People who are listening to this on my feed will know that I've been doing the Wine, Dine 69 podcast for almost 3 years now, which is pretty wild. I am a real estate professional, writer, actor, podcaster, and aspiring intimacy coordinator for theater. So that's kind of what I do, and trying to connect with other sex experts in the arena to just try to make everybody's sex lives and intimate lives better. Let's hear a little bit about you, Lisa.
Thank you, Rachel. I love that. I love that you're an intimacy coordinator, as you said, aspiring. That's so interesting. Yeah. So I'm Lisa Welsh. And as you said, for anybody who's been following me for a while knows that I'm a sex educator. I am based in Durban, South Africa, and I work in the realm of sexual health, rights, justice, wellness around with multiple different organizations. And I absolutely love helping people to have more fun in bed.
Yes, that's what we're here for, right? It's doing the Lord's work.
That is what we're here for. And I know today we were planning on talking about planned intimacy. Mm-hmm. But chat a little bit about intimacy coordination, because that is kind of like planned out intimacy.
It is the definition of planned out intimacy, yeah.
And it's so important because so many of us actually learn about sex from what we see on the screen, right?
Totally, yep. Yeah, no, it's been a really cool journey. It's one of those things where, I was having a slight, not midlife crisis and not quarter life crisis, somewhere in between the two of those, and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I was just like, wow, why is it that everything that like makes money is like boring as shit? Like, I don't understand why this is. But I kind of, cobbled together this like dream career that I have that involves podcasting and being an actor and being a writer and all of this good stuff. And after the Me Too movement came out, there became a real need for intimacy coordinators and intimacy directors. And kind of what that is if you think about like, there's like a fight scene in a movie, you need somebody to choreograph it. To make sure that everybody's being safe. I mean, it's the same thing with intimacy. If you are doing a scene where there is like an assault of some kind, or even just discussing an assault, or, even a consensual act, it's really important that both actors are really, really comfortable. And so the role of an intimacy coordinator for film and an intimacy director for theater is to come in and help with that choreographing and help with checking in to make sure that everybody's comfortable every step of the way. Basically acting as an advocate for the actors to make sure that they are comfortable and helping them to set boundaries. So it really is like the definition of planned intimacy. And I'm kind of just starting out in that direction, but it is the perfect intersection of everything that I love. So excited.
Amazing. I love that you were able to find something that actually combined all of your passions and just found this niche, because it is so important. And as you say, sex scenes, I mean, if we look back in time at all the movies, I mean, it's cringy to see what they maybe were teaching the viewers, imagine what was happening to the actors as well. Like, that's another whole level.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, the Me Too movement took over the world, and I mean rightfully so, and ever since then intimacy direction and intimacy coordination has been really big, and just making sure that everybody feels safe emotionally and physically, because mm-hmm. it's not just physical safety that we're worried about, it's emotional safety too. So
yeah
it's been a journey, and I'm really excited to kind of continue along the last couple of years have been wild for everybody, I think, and how we approach everything, you know, virtually versus in person, and making sure that everybody feels safer on a day-to-day basis in their jobs. But I kind of just figured it out as the world fell apart, I kind of fell apart and then rebuilt back too. I feel like a lot of people have that story, actually.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I love to hear it. It's great to hear. And I'll know where to direct people if they need an intimacy coordinator online, at least.
Oh, yeah. No, I can definitely talk through that. It's intimacy direction too, and intimacy coordinating is so important too, just on a day-to-day basis. I mean, if you're somebody who's a people pleaser, like it's really good to learn how to say no. And it feels really, really uncomfortable at first, but the entire first session of intimacy coordination and intimacy direction, I go through the IDC. It's all about like setting boundaries and learning how to say no. So amazing. It's anybody really could benefit from it, I think.
That is fantastic. And interestingly, it's perfectly positioned because this year's World Sexual Health Day is actually, the theme is consent. So that's happening. But yeah, I support the communications committee for the World Association for Sexual Health. So I'm working on promoting that this year. So consent is the theme of the year for World Sexual Health Day.
I love that.
Get on that bandwagon.
I'm going to have to find that website.
Yes. Definitely. So, but today we actually were thinking about chatting about planned intimacy, mm-hmm. otherwise known as scheduled sex, which I know people find initially they think is incredibly boring. But I think it's really important in today's modern life because everybody is so busy and have so many things pulling us from one place to another. And we've spoken briefly about the pandemic and how everybody is just tired, exhausted. And maybe things fell apart and fell back together in some ways, but now we're just like, oh, so tired. Yeah.
No, existing is completely exhausting. And I mean, that's what you do, is you work with people who are busy and tired and how to, you know, enhance their intimate lives. So I am interested to dive into it and for, you know, you to share what you have in terms of tips for keeping the spark and the spontaneity alive, even despite, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things speaking about spontaneity is that we expect so much. Our expectations are that we will just have spontaneous sex, and it will be amazing. We'll just grab each other and be like, yeah, let's go for it. But in my experience with my own life and with the people I work with, that just is not reality. It's just not reality. If you don't schedule a space, a container for intimacy, then it's hard to just find it. It's hard to just find a snatch of time, right? When both people have the energy and both people have the availability and the libido and the kids are dealt with and the dogs are dealt with. What do you think?
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it's difficult for me because I hate the idea of I'm such a scheduled calendar person. My planner this week is just color-coded like crazy. And for me, I find it difficult to take this idea and go, okay, well, we're going to just schedule sex. And then it's like, oh, well, now there's pressure to do it. There's pressure for it to be good. There's pressure for all these things. But I think that that's putting way too much of a pressure on it, because it's all about exploring. And it's all about, I mean, if you can just set aside today we're going to play with vibrators. And even if you have a topic that you're going to be diving into and exploring together, I feel like that can make all the difference because it makes you a little bit, you know what's happening. It's a little bit exciting, you know?
Yes, I love that. But I love what you're saying. It's a very good point because when you are already overscheduled, the idea of putting in sex on that schedule can feel like something else you've got to do, like a chore. But I like to see it as you're creating an opportunity. You're actually setting a boundary around a space. You're not defining what has to happen within that space. Although I love your thought on a theme or an idea to do together. But I also love that you said play, because if you can create a box around your playtime, and then be like, okay, this is playtime, but be strict about keeping it that way,
then it gives
you space. It doesn't have to feel like there's certain expectations, because even though it's like a sex date, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that sex is going to happen or that penis and vagina sex has to happen,
right? And I think we need to, I say this all the time, like we really need to be better at defining sex the way that sex is defined so frequently. And at least like cishet couples is, you know, penis and vagina sex. And then once the person with the penis finishes, it's over. Mm-hmm. And that's not how it has to be.
No.
So I keep talking
because I've got there's a definition that I love, but I need to go find it. So you keep talking.
Yeah. No, I think that it's just this idea that, I mean, I say this all the time, like we live in a pretty penis-centric society. Like,
yeah.
They're very focused on dick. But to have this idea that maybe there never needs to be like penis and vagina sex. Maybe it can just be like experimenting with oral, or maybe it can just be like experimenting with hand stuff. It's fun. And like we put so much pressure on sex, but, like it's supposed to be fun. Really. So
my dog is having a moment in the background.
Oh, that's okay.
So I can't find the exact quote, but it's by Ellen DeLan. And she just has such a great way of looking at sex as like a consensually like enjoyable experience shared equally by consenting people. Like she said it just so well. And I love that. It just is far more playful, far more like experiential, exactly what you're saying. It doesn't have to be focused around anything in particular.
People are so serious. And it's like, you know, I've had people in like the throes of passion, like come in my eye, you know what I mean? And like, you have to be able to laugh. Like it's like bodies are gross and like, it's ridiculous. And just acknowledging that and being able to laugh, being able to laugh during sex, I think can make all the difference.
I totally agree. Like I did a YouTube video last week on doggy style, like all of the, like how to really make doggy style really hot. And I just had to like think, you know, but queefing is a very real possibility.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we need to like accept that that's probably going to happen. And then it's not the end of it. Like we can just laugh about it. It's funny.
Yes, it is funny. It's bloody brilliantly hilarious and awful at the same time. Like sex is messy and we're human and imperfect, and wet body parts being slodged around together is going to sometimes make a noise.
And I think like we need to let go of this idea too. You know, I'm on Reddit a lot, and I'm on the sex subreddit, which is a beautiful and awful place all at the same time. But you know, I see these in this situation, like women come onto this subreddit and say, my boyfriend wants to try anal, but he really wants me to like clean really well first. And like, it's like, okay, well that's fine. But if you want to try anal, you have to accept that like shit might literally happen.
Yeah.
And like to have this idea that like, oh, I want to try, like you want to try this thing with all of the reward, but none of the risk. It's like, no, you don't get to have it that way.
Yeah, and the idea of making it so clear that you have to clean really well so that I can now penetrate your butt, like it puts too much pressure on the person being penetrated. Like that is a lot of stress, and it's going to be difficult to relax because nobody wants poo to happen. So if you're the person receiving penetration, it's likely that that's on your mind too. But if it's now being said, you need to make sure you clean properly. Like it just adds an extra layer of stress that can make things a little bit more difficult to enjoy during anal.
I think that it's, you know, I myself have never done anal. I don't even know if it's something I'm interested in. It's something I'm like, all right, like if it comes up naturally, then like, okay. But I've always said that if I'm going to try it, I want to peg my partner first. Because I don't want somebody to penetrate me who has no idea how much it can hurt and has no idea how much, how gentle I need you to be. So it's like, well, like if I penetrate you first, then like you're really going to have some empathy when it comes to, you know, turning it around. So maybe that's unfair, but that's my
guess. I think the empathy piece there is a real big, one. Sorry, my dogs are literally right outside my door being very annoying.
All right. I know how it goes.
But with pegging, I think it's a massive shift of gears so that the person who is actually receiving, maybe for the very first time in their life, is if it's a cishet man, then it's like that, this understanding of what it means to be penetrated. Like that is the mental vulnerability required, as well as the physical surrender that I can understand why you would say that in order, if you want to do this to me, then I want to do it to you. And then we can all understand and have real empathy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I had a partner who like, you know, had done anal a lot and he was always like, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And, you know, I was like, it is a big deal though. Like it is. And I didn't have the confidence that he would be particularly gentle just because of his past experiences. And I was like, no,
I'm thinking it's not a big deal. But anytime someone is penetrating somebody is a big deal. It's with a strap on or a finger or a penis, it's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a very vulnerable thing to be penetrated. So but I mean that's going completely off topic in terms
I love it.
Scheduling sex.
Well, okay. Well, how about this? Because you made me think of another subreddit, which is Dead Bedrooms. I don't know if you've ever come across that.
A very, difficult topic, I think, for a number of reasons.
A very difficult topic. And I think sexless marriage is becoming more and more popular for so many reasons. And I think the definition of a sexless marriage is a couple who have sex less than 10 times a year. But I think really it's just if you're having sex less than you want to, and you know, one person is maybe dissatisfied. And that is something that I think that scheduled sex can help with. I really do.
Yeah. And I get the idea that like, oh, it puts pressure. Like, what if I'm not in the mood? But if you think about it in terms of instead nurturing the relationship, like not even thinking about it as sexual, but instead think about it as nurturing the relationship.
Yes. And playtime, because feeling like you're not in the mood is totally legitimate. And nobody ever has to do anything they don't want to do, but what could you be available for? That's how I like to put it. Like, what are you able to do? What would feel good right now? I mean, and especially understanding the idea of responsive versus spontaneous desire, that so many women and people with vulvas actually needs a stimulus in order to feel turned on. So would it feel good if you had this sex container where you're going to like hang out and be playful, do something different, maybe make out? And within that container, you can spend a little bit of time actually creating the space. Like you can discuss together, maybe we can put some pillows and some candles, you be in charge of the drinks, I'll create the snacks. Like I think a sex snack platter is a game changer. It is for my house. I love it.
There's so many like themed things you could do too.
Yes. That's wonderful, because it really then feels like we're going to be together in this space for a while. There's no particular thing mapped out, but I'm going to create the platter. We're going to put some fruits and some chocolates. And when I'm doing like the boring weekly grocery shop, because I've got three teenage boys, when I get to the snack aisle, then I think, oh, what should we have in our sex platter?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I don't know. It just, I find too that it's funny because scheduling sex is, people think like, oh, it's scheduling something. It's taking away the spontaneity. But at the same time, if you're someone like me who is very like, okay, this is done. I need to move to the next thing. I need to move to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Who becomes kind of like, when I'm stressed out, I become kind of robotic. When you are able to set aside this time and say, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. This is what our focus is on. It's the same thing. It's like you're looking at it and it's like, okay, it's a calendar event now. It's a thing to do, but it's also like, but that's the freedom where it's the thing to do. And being able to, you know, say, okay, well, what does this mean? How there's it's set aside time, but there's no pressure. And I know that for me, even if, I mean, I identify as demisexual, if there is like a conversation where we start off having an intimate conversation and then we start making out, I'm going to be ready to go regardless.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So it's like, okay, if we set aside this time and we, you know, have some intimate discussion and then start kissing, then it's like, all right, it's going to happen anyway. So
I love that. Yes, that's it. It's setting aside time. And, you know, when it's in your calendar later, like you can see this is the day. Oh, yeah, this is the schedule for play. Then you think, okay, well, maybe, you know, do like for me, I would like to shave my legs then. If that's going to be the thing, maybe I'll choose to put out this particular outfit. And it's like preparing myself. And this is me doing the things that make me feel ready later, that everybody has their own thing that maybe makes them feel better, or obstacles that make them not want to do it. Like, do you feel like you don't want to have sex after you have a big dinner? Then maybe right. Don't have a big dinner before right. that. You know, well, do you need to like the kids?
Yeah, no, I mean, that self-care too, if you think about it, it's like solo foreplay.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, if you're shaving your legs, you're thinking, like, you're going to be thinking about, like, oh, I'm shaving my legs so that, like, when he or she runs their fingers, like, over, like, it's going to be, and it's like, oh, that looks kind of, the smallest things can start being foreplay. And, yeah. I mean, I don't remember who said it, but whoever did was brilliant, that, like, oh, a woman's biggest sexual organ is the one between her ears. It's her brain. And so like even having it there on the schedule is something. But I mean, so when you talk to couples about scheduling sex, what's the advice that you give them for like dealing with like the awkwardness around it? So like, you know, they're in the room together and they're like for the first time, they're like, all right, like we're scheduling sex. Like, I know this person, I've been married to them for, you know, 6 years or whatever it might be, but like all of a sudden I feel really shy and awkward. What's your advice generally for people?
That's such a good question. So the first thing I'd say is that you don't even have to tell your partner that you're scheduling sex. You can change your expectation. You just know for yourself, I'm available today for sex, right? You just know, okay, today is a day I actually want to set aside time to connect or to be playful. And whether that's, you know, dressing a little bit differently for the sofa, being a bit provocative and whispering in their ear and just seeing what happens with no expectation of what might happen. So that's one way that you can do it. But if you do both set this time aside and you've decided this is your time to connect, then that awkwardness is like the sexual friction and the tension. Like, that is good. If you have that nervous awkwardness, that is so hot. That is remembering that you're two hot-blooded people and not just following the script, right? The normal script of just the normal old sex that you always have. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you don't know what to do is excellent because it means that you're being creative.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
That's such a good point. And it's like you want the spontaneity, but then once you get there, not knowing what to do and not having that spontaneity is spontaneous in and of itself, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Because it is bloody vulnerable having sex, and especially with somebody who you've been together with for a long time, and you do fall into this predictability. You know exactly what's going to happen, who's going to initiate, how it starts, how it ends. That if you take that script away, it's scary. And that's why it can feel awkward. So that's why I loved your idea actually of saying like, oh, let's play with vibrators. And this is something that I'm putting together right now is sexy planned out dates so that once a week people can receive like a plan mapped out and they can like give it a try. And then they get to blame me for the new idea, for example. Like, they don't have to say, oh, I would never have suggested this, but here it is in the inbox. What do you think?
I love that. No, that's such a cool idea because it's like, I mean, you have people who plan proposals, you have people who plan, I don't know, like various like events, like there are people who plan like, you know, adventure dates, you know, yeah. Why wouldn't you have somebody to plan like a sexy date?
It's like intimacy coordination, right? Why on earth wouldn't you plan out a sex scene? Why wouldn't you learn about sex? Why wouldn't you map out what you're going to do? Why wouldn't you explore? Like, we just seem to have this weird thing that humans must just know about sex and humans must just know what to do, roll the camera or just get under the sheets and do the thing. Like, how are we ever going to know? We're not taught. We don't talk about it.
Definitely. No, absolutely. And that's such a, yeah. Yeah. Being able, I mean, what about couples who, like, for example, aren't communicating about sex very openly? Like, how do you do a planned sex date when you're having a hard time communicating about sex, period?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, Rachel. And for some people, a planned out sex date is too big a step, and it's not the right thing for everybody. Because if people are unable to have the initial conversation, and if they're, you know, if they've got resentments happening or unprocessed trauma between them or something that needs to be dealt with first, then it's important to deal with that first. So it isn't for everybody, but if it is just like a little bit of awkwardness that you don't know what to say because you've never really spoken about sex, then it can be a really good icebreaker. It can really just help you to just try things out. And as part of the overall session of scheduled play, it can help you to learn how to communicate beforehand, because you have to say something like, okay, listen, I'm going to bring the lube. Mm-hmm. Or yes. would you like to choose the drinks? And it also encourages after play. And so with these small little bits of communication, your confidence gradually builds, because the after play is important to reassure and reconnect, debrief what worked, what didn't work. Would you never do that again? Did you really love that little particular thing? Mm-hmm. Right. That already rolls over into the consent conversation for the next time, so that it becomes an ongoing communication. And the great thing that I love about sex, and I reckon you do too, is the fact that the lessons you learn in the bedroom or the kitchen or wherever you are, those lessons help you in other areas of your life, like people pleasing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Right. I learned to speak up for myself through saying no in the bedroom, like, mm-hmm. and understanding that I matter and I deserve to have autonomy over my body, that helped me in other areas. My body confidence came through sex, you know? So I think it can really help couples to communicate. Not every single situation, everybody's individual, but yeah, it can certainly be a tool for people.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. And I don't know, I keep going back to this idea of like, scheduling sex. Like, what about somebody who has such a hard time unwinding, right? Like, they want to schedule, they want to have a good sex life with their partner, but you know, if they're somebody, you know, again, like me, who when they're stressed out, it becomes very like, okay, step point A to point B to point C to point D, you know, just have to get through these events. Like, yeah, how do you help that person like relax so that even if the sex is scheduled, they, you know, get there and they're able to be present in their body? Because I think that's like, you know, on a serious note, I think that's a very big trauma response, is just like not being connected to your body. And so if there are people who struggle with that and they have planned sex and they feel like that puts pressure on them, I'm wondering like what the best thing to do to help them relax or to help them to see it, you know, from a different angle could be, so that they can be present in their body.
That is such a good point, because just because it's scheduled doesn't mean that something has to happen. And I think it's really important that you said that. Consent, no matter what, no matter if you've agreed and planned and put it in the schedule, it doesn't have to mean that anything has to happen. But I would suggest something like a buffer between your day's work and the planned playtime, because for me too, I really struggle to switch gears from work mode to play mode. And I can, you know, get grumpy and tetchy and it's really hard to drop into your body when you've had a busy, busy day. And sometimes knowing there's this sex date at the end of the day can be like, oh. So I would love to say add a buffer, and I call it a pleasure portal. It looks different.
Ooh, today. Okay.
Yeah, so you're almost going through this portal, allowing yourself to come back down to earth and to your body. And that should include a bit of movement somehow, music, movement, yep. Mm-hmm. And then add your own things. Like, what would feel good to you? Is it a shower, a bath, a dance? Is it a masturbation session? Is it other self-care? Like, I know you also speak a lot about self-care. I think it's finding that balance of self-care and solo pleasure and partnered pleasure. And of course, not forgetting the fact that this play session and scheduled sex could certainly be a solo thing as well.
That's a really good point. Yeah, being able to create like that buffer there to be able to say, okay, well, now I'm in this mode and now I need to be in this mode.
Yeah. And even not need to be in, right? Even that, like,
right, come on, let's right.
This mode, it's more like, okay, let's just see what's available.
Let's what energy loosen up a little like. Bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what about like expectations? Like, so if, you know, one of the partners is this person that we're talking about, it was having a harder time. And then there's the other partner who's like, all right, like, you know, it's Wednesday night. Like, this is our scheduled sex time. And their partner is like, yeah, I don't really feel like, I mean, how do you manage expectations too with something like that?
It's the boringest answer. Communication.
Yeah.
Communication and just seeing what are you available for? Like, it's like throwing away the script. Because if, so for example, you have different kinds of sex, right? You have, imagine there's a buffet of sex. So you can be having like hot dog sex, right? Here and there, it doesn't need to be scheduled. Like my husband and I are morning sex people before the teenagers are awake. We have quickies in the morning. And I also like to have a longer connection. Mm-hmm. You know, once a week. So I like the idea that the longer connection is that kind of scheduled thing, but the expectation must be that it's a connection schedule. Like we said, like a nurturing the relationship space, because if one person just literally doesn't have the capacity for, you know, penetration or pegging or whatever, like it needs to be like a degree of freedom around it so that both people can actually be nurtured by it. So whether that is lying down together and listening to erotica, or one person giving a massage and the other person receiving, or having a lovely sexual discussion, like a stimulating intellectual discussion, or watching Netflix. Like, I'm no bloody dissing to Netflix and chill. Like, but it's just it's really what I want to say is it's a time to put your bloody phone down.
That's really, I mean, really, that's the crux of the issue, right? It's like really scheduled time for intimacy. Just put it in a, yeah.
Surgically remove your cell phone from your hands.
Yes. No, I think that's a good point, that really is, once the phone is set aside, then the possibilities open up.
Oh my goodness.
And that's the thing is that if you don't have the phones, most of your distractions are gone. And so, I mean, and for maybe for people who, you know, scheduled sex sounds too scary or whatever, just saying, okay, well, like, you know, two times a week, like for this hour, we're going to put our phones down. Or I know couples who, you know, for an hour, like when they get home from work, they put their phone down. And like more often than not, they end up having sex.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you put your phone down and you focus on connecting, then like those things just kind of go along with each other.
It shouldn't be so hard, right? But it just the fact of putting your phone down is huge. It's like a rebellion. And we've said a few times how strung out we all are and like over connected and exhausted and constantly switched on. And yet it's hard to put the phone down. But if we get to the end of a day and we've only got 70% left in the tank, for example, mm-hmm. you're still giving 10% to your phone all the time, you know?
Yeah, totally.
It just frees you up to be there for yourself more, to do the self-care piece, and to be with your partner more if that is something that you want to do. It just gives you a little bit of freedom, and it can be really liberating, as scary as it is. I don't know what we think we're going to miss, but I'm guilty too.
Oh, yeah. I think we all are. But in terms of, like, and so I'm thinking more about the self-love piece, because like you said, that is a very big part of my show. It's about, you know, sex, dating, relationships, and self-love, because what I've learned is that, you know, if you don't have the self-love, all of those other pieces do suffer.
Yeah.
And so ideas for somebody, again, like let's go to this place where, you know, somebody needs an hour of buffer time to be able to reconnect. What are some ideas that we can give listeners for getting into your body more? I mean, you talked about like putting on music, maybe dancing. Like if that's not your thing, because it's definitely not for me. Like, what about like yoga or something like that? Different things that can get the body moving.
Yeah. What would you suggest? I would love to hear some of your suggestions on getting into the body.
Yeah. I think that there's like so many like tactile, like I think that one of the best feelings in the world is having freshly washed sheets with freshly shaved legs.
Oh yeah.
Like that's like such a good feeling. And so if you can like think ahead and be like, I think I like really would like to feel that. And you know, you can plan ahead for that. You can make sure that your sheets are done. You can come home from work and shave your legs, you know, or eating something. I'm very much like a eating person. I like food a lot.
Yes.
So, you know, if there's like chocolates or something that, you know, can put you in that space that, but really you can't just, it's not just eating for the sake of eating. It's really being present and thinking about the process of eating. So
yeah. I think
exactly. It's like, how is your tongue feeling? How is the roof of your mouth? Like what does it smell like? All of those different, like, really, I found that for me, focusing in on the senses, you know, doing that, I forget what it's called, but it's like that, like five things that you can see, four things that you can touch, three things that you can hear, two things that you can smell, one thing that you can taste, or something like that.
Yes.
That always, as somebody who like, you know, does have a hard time like being present in my body because my brain is always going 1,000 miles a minute, being able to do that exercise is something that I try to get more in touch with. I'm also very big about like inner child work, right? Like being able to connect with like younger version of yourself and give little you like that love that, you know, you might have been missing out at that time. And that always makes me feel really connected to my body too, because it's almost like this, like these different versions of me are able to overlap at that time.
I love that. And, you know, it might sound strange to some people to hear like you talking about inner child work when we're talking about sex, but it actually can really help you to heal like any shame that you hold surrounding sex, shame that you don't even know where it came from. And especially around self-pleasure and masturbation, like that can be really tied up with inner child work and feeling like you're wrong or dirty or naughty for enjoying sexual pleasure. So I really think,
absolutely.
I think that's wonderful. How would you suggest somebody could tap into inner child work? Like if they were just on their own, like what could they do to just kind of
explore that? I have a ton of tips for that. Like I think that one of the big ones that I did in my bathroom, like right over there, I have a picture of like, I think about my life and I think about, you know, when I started being bullied or when I started like not feeling comfortable in my skin, because the way that I think about it is that going through adulthood really is about returning to the most pure version of you that existed once, because you're born pure. And then you learn all of these negative things. People are mean to you. You learn to be unkind to yourself. So getting older and becoming more emotionally enlightened, is trying to return to that most pure version of yourself in many ways.
Yeah.
So I have this picture of me when I was 11 or 12, and I have it on my bathroom mirror. And, you know, I just, some days I don't look at it. Some days I'm in too much of a hurry, but it's there so that if I'm, you know, looking at myself in the mirror, it's right up there. And it just reminds me like, that's who you are really. Like that's who you are.
It's actually so powerful and emotional to actually think of yourself as that little person. Like, and it just makes you have so much compassion for yourself that it's very easy to not have when we're going around life. We're so tough on ourselves. Like we are so freaking tough on ourselves. And I think hearing you, the way you speak about being busy and productive, I can really connect with that same feeling. And the way that we push ourselves. I mean, I can be like bursting to pee, like desperate. And I'll be like, rush down to the stairs, pee quickly. Like, I don't even give myself space to really just go pee when I need to, you know? I think probably a lot of people will be like, yeah, me too. Because it's a self-worth thing. It's a small thing, but by remembering that you are that little person, you still are that human with the same, you still deserve everything that little person deserves. You still are worthy of all of it. And you're worthy of pleasure, and you're worthy of carving out time for play. And it's, no, it's not productive, but yes, it's important.
Well, I mean, there's such this focus on being productive that we have now in 2023. And it's, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm just like, this isn't why I'm here. I'm naturally a productive person, but this isn't why I'm here. I'm not on this earth to be a productive person, to push out these reports or to, you know, I'm here to learn. I'm here to be curious. I'm here to have pleasure. You know, that's, I'm not here to work 5 days a week, you know, 10 hours. Like, that's not why I'm here. And the hustle culture that we have now, I'm very anti hustle culture. But yeah, I think like the inner child work, and, you know, like you said, like, you know, the shame that can come along with that. There, I mean, I started masturbating when I was 3. I think I've actually heard like girls tend to do that a little bit earlier than boys do. But I started really, really early. And in some ways, it really messed with me because, like, I would do it in public and I wouldn't understand that it was, you know, something that you do by yourself. And so I would get bullied. And it's like, well, shouldn't be bullied, you know, but also, like, it's understandable that people were really weirded out by it. But in many ways, too, like, I feel like I've had, like, no shame. And at the same time, like, all of the shame, because I learned to experience pleasure from such an early age that I am not shy about it. I'm very good about, you know, asking for it. But at the same time, there is this shame surrounding. If you're an expressive person about wanting pleasure, society will shut you down. So I didn't have shame, didn't have shame, didn't have shame. And then I hit, like, you know, my 20s, and it was like, oh, there's the shame. So it's kind of interesting how that comes in too. And it doesn't necessarily mean when you're a child, it can be when you're a little bit older. But yeah, I mean, self-love and sex really are, to me, intrinsically linked, and not just in the form of masturbation, but really the more that you love yourself, the more present in your body you're going to be. I envision conversations with, like, little me. Like, I'll be, like, driving to work, and I will, like, envision, like, little me, like, next to me on the seat, and I'll, like, almost, like, talk to her. And it sounds, like, really lame, like, when I'm saying it out loud, but, you know, I just imagine how, like, 9-year-old Rachel would look at me now and would be like, oh my God, like, you, like, you come home from work and you're, like, wearing, like, a button up and, like, a set of high heels, and you go onto your roof in this city and you drink a glass of wine. That is so cool. Like, and if you look at yourself through that younger you eyes, it really, I think, can make all the difference, and it makes you realize how much you really have accomplished.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You're so right. You know, like, the way that they would look up to you and be proud. And it's true, because we've accomplished so much. I think so many of us can really know that we have. We've come through a lot. We've been through hard things. Mm-hmm. And now here we are doing our best to live a pleasurable life and get things done and be proud of ourselves. And we have every reason to be proud of ourselves. But thank you so much for sharing with vulnerability. That was really powerful. That was a powerful thing to share. And I just think so many of us do carry sexual shame from our younger years, that there is something that nearly every single person carries that we feel ashamed of, or think that, you know, we were the only person that did that thing. And the truth is that humans are sexual creatures, right? And as we said at the beginning, we're messy and it's imperfect and awkward and funny. And if we can integrate all of those pieces, it can be wonderful. It can really lead to a richer, pleasurable life and an intimate life with ourselves and with anybody else that we want to invite in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, that's where it comes into partner play. And I do love that, like, you know, taking a step back from that for a second, I do love that you talked about setting aside scheduled intimacy can also be by yourself.
Yeah.
So, like, can you talk more about that? Like, what does that look like? And do people, like, laugh at that when you say it, or is it exciting to people? Like, what does that look like?
I think people don't even imagine that that's allowed, right? I mean, I'm especially talking now to cisgendered women who have not been encouraged to self-pleasure and masturbate, who were maybe shamed about it, or maybe haven't ever. There's so many women who have not experienced orgasm even, right? And just find the idea of self-pleasure and masturbation to be so unpleasant, right? The idea of it is so uncomfortable and unpleasant. Like, okay, so now what? Here I am in my bedroom. Now what do I do? Who may be curious about sex toys or the kind of orgasms that they've heard about that they're not experiencing. So setting aside time for masturbation as a woman is a rebellious act, hugely. And it's an opportunity for all of your inner critic voices to come up, all of those old shame stories to come up. And that's actually one of the reasons why I really advocate for this, because the minute you get on your own and you get your hand anywhere near your vulva, your brain is going to start bringing up all of the stories for you and telling you, oh, you know, this, there's so many other things you could be doing right now, or this is disgusting, or you're ugly, or your vulva tastes funny or smells funny, you know, which isn't true, but it's a chance to hear those voices and notice them, because sometimes that's all you need to do is notice, okay, that's a negative story that I hold. Because if you can hear those stories and release them and choose something more accurate, like, oh no, this is actually what pussies are meant to smell like. Mm-hmm. This is normal. They're not supposed to smell like roses. Then healing those stories can help you if and when you are in partnered situations, if you've allowed space for that to come up. So that's one part, is just giving yourself space to have those little inner conversations. And secondly, learning about your own anatomy and learning what you like. Like, strangely for me as a younger person, I didn't discover orgasm through my clitoris initially. It was through my G-spot. So I had been conditioned to believe that sex and pleasure is from penetration only. So the first time I discovered that you could have a clitoral orgasm on its own, my mind was blown. I had no idea. And I think a lot of people discover it the other way around. But how will you ever know what pleasures and treasures are awaiting if you don't take the time to learn? Because we're all wired a little bit differently down there. And our partners, if we're in a heterosexual situation, they don't have a vulva. So how are they going to know how it works? Yeah. So taking the time to get to know your own anatomy with a mirror or a camera or just a hand, you don't have to look, but I recommend looking. You never know what you might find. Then learning about actually what feels good and playing around with different strokes and pressures and speeds and lubrications and toys, if that feels like something you want to explore. But creating the space for that, and even the idea, even if you can create 5 minutes and let yourself do this, it's revolutionary. It's giving yourself permission to just do nothing except explore your own body for a while is huge. It's like telling yourself, I am worth this. This is, I deserve this. I don't need permission. This is my body. I'm allowed. I'm a grown up. Yeah. I can touch myself.
It's like telling shame to fuck off. It is.
Yep.
It's basically like, yeah, giving the middle finger to the idea of shame. I think it's really important, and I feel like I say this like in every episode that I do that's sex centric, but like less than 25% of women who have vagina, people who have vaginas, can come from penetration alone. It is rare. And so it's important to know how, and it's also important to remember, I say this a lot too, that the clitoris is a lot bigger than you think that it is. You know, so there are so many opportunities and different ways of doing things. And just because the way that you do something is different than the way that somebody else does it, doesn't mean that it's wrong. Yeah. It's just understanding how you tick and taking time to like date yourself, you know, and like understand how your body works. It's only going to benefit your romantic relationships later on.
Completely. And I would add to that so many people, all genders actually, often have one way of masturbating that gets them to come quickly, and they think that's the only way. And then often they can think they're broken, like, oh, this is the way I come. That's just how I'm wired. But actually, there are so many different options that just because you've got one favorite way that works well and you've created strong neural pathways to react to that stimulation, that having these times for exploration can help your body to learn to receive pleasure from other different things, like other erogenous zones and other kinds of stimulation and other speeds, that you might find that you really love something still and firm against your A spots. That might be like a whole new thing. You know? I mean, there's so many different spots inside and outside and all over the place. They just need to be unlocked and awakened and blood flow supply and for you to get out of your head for a little while.
That's really what it is. And I mean, that's what's so great about, like, you know, taking this time to date yourself for solo play and also with a partner. It's just, you set aside this time so that you don't need to think. It's almost like it's that you can just kind of feel and be in your body and with your partner. And maybe that will lead to penetration. Maybe that will lead to just kissing. Like, who knows? But the idea is that the time is set aside for it.
Absolutely. Because, you know, even nipples can be orgasmic if you just give yourself the time, open your mind to it, and then just spend time stimulating them, because that's it. Like, we're all in such a rush to have that hot dog sex I mentioned earlier. On that buffet, there are endless different options to taste and try. And what can come of it? If you fancy trying it, try it. If you didn't like it, try something else.
I think that, I mean, a lot of us, like, you know, view sex as, I mean, like P&V is the gold standard that we do things by, but there doesn't need to be an end goal. It can just kind of be exploring. And I know that that's frustrating for some people who, you know, may think that there does need to be an orgasm for sex to be considered successful, but it doesn't. And being able to take that time to just enjoy each other's bodies and view it as a connective experience and being in the now. I mean, because if this time that you're setting aside is for the betterment of your relationship, orgasms aren't necessarily for the betterment of your relationship. Connection is.
Okay. Absolutely. Rachel, that was like that is the mic drop moment. Why are you doing this? Why are we bothering to set aside time for planned intimacy? What is your end goal? Connection. Nurturing, whether that's a partner or yourself, whatever it is, we know that we didn't say do this for orgasm. Some people, orgasm might be on the agenda, great, but that's not the whole idea. That's not the whole reason for doing this. There's so much more to it. There's so many different reasons that people have sex, and orgasm is just one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's not my primary concern. I like you said, you know, there are people who have these neural pathways, they know how to make themselves work. And it's like, look, like, I'm good. I can, like, come in like 5 seconds if I need to. Like, it's not, I don't need a partner for that, you know? So the partnered experience is really way more about the connection.
Definitely. For me. Me too.
It's just important to remember that we put so much pressure on sex in terms of, and I think that people with penises put a lot of pressure on themselves when it comes to sex as well, but just kind of remembering that it's important to focus on the connection. It's not about performing. It's about, what are we experiencing together? What are we creating together?
That is such a good point, Rachel. I had a conversation with a urologist not so long ago. And he was talking about that the fact that 50% of people with penises will experience erectile dysfunction at some point. And erections are not essential for sex. If we take up this definition and expand it as we have been, flaccid penises, soft penises can experience pleasure and are worthy of having pleasure and being loved just as much as erect penises. Like, if we can change this definition and make space for connection, then it allows such a broader experience for everybody. No matter what the genitals are, no matter how the genitals are behaving at any given time, there can still be fun and pleasure and connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think that just we need to put less pressure on sex. We need to focus on having more fun with sex. And it's funny because, like, you know, what we've talked about today is really about scheduling time. But it's not about scheduling time to put pressure on sex or scheduling time for pleasure. It's about scheduling time to explore and play.
Yes, playtime.
Which I think is, like, really what it comes down to is less pressure. You would think that scheduling sex is like putting more pressure, but
Yeah.
actually the way that you're talking about doing it and the way that you talk to clients about doing it, it's actually less.
Easily misunderstood. I'm glad we clarified it.
Yeah, no, I was like, all right, I'm just always in my brain so much that I'm like, all right, like this is gonna be an interesting conversation for me, to be able to explore this idea. But
Yeah.
I think I get it. I think I get it.
I'm so glad you did. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel, for exploring it with me. You just had so
Yeah.
many ideas and suggestions. I think that people will gain a lot from this chat.
Yeah, definitely. And where can people follow up with you?
So you can find me in bed with Lisa. I'm all over the place at In Bed with Lisa. Probably YouTube is my best place at the moment. And you can also grab two free sexy date nights fully planned out on my website, which is
Ooh.
inbedwithlisa.com. How about you, Rachel?
Amazing. Yeah, no, I'm on everything at like Wine Dine 69 Pod. I have a link tree. You can put that in the episode notes. So I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. I'm all over the place these days, it feels like. So yeah, and you can listen to the show. We drop episodes every other week on Fridays.
Fantastic. Wine Dine 69. I just love the name of your show.
Yeah, I can't take credit for it. It was my former co-host's idea, and it's brilliant. So
It
thanks,
is a
Anne.
brilliant one. Oh, well,
Yeah,
it's been such a pleasure to chat to you. I've loved getting to know you.
you too. Yeah, definitely. And I think that hopefully both of our listeners will take a lot away from this conversation. And if they want to explore these sexy date nights, planned date nights, they have a place to go. And if they have questions about intimacy coordination, they can head on over to me.
Absolutely. We'll share everything in the show notes. But thank you for listening. Thank you for being here with me, Rachel. I've
Yeah,
loved
thank you. And thanks,
chatting to
everyone.
you. Bye.
Bye.